Maine's Apple Heritage. If you could travel back in time 200 years, you'd find a New England landscape replete with apple trees. And those trees would be of countless varieties. People in Maine used to grow apples for all sorts of purposes, not just eating whole or making pie. Some apples were best for ciders or vinegars. Some lasted in storage longer than others. Perhaps you've taken a walk in the woods and stumbled across an old apple tree and wondered about it. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we talk with the man whose life work is identifying and propagating historic apple varieties. He'll be joined by UMaine's leading pomologist. What have you always wanted to know about Maine apples? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Apple picking season is well underway in Maine. Are you headed out to your favorite orchard? How much do you know about those apples you pick? Well, today I have two apple experts with me to teach us about Maine's apple heritage. In the studio with me, Renee Moran. She is a tree fruit specialist, or a pomologist, a new word I just learned, at the University of Maine Cooperative Extension. Are you Cooperative Extension or are you Maine?
Both.
Both. I gotcha. John Bunker, co-owner of Super Chili Farm in Palermo. His new book, it's beautiful, is Apples and the Art of Detection, Tracking Down, Identifying, and Preserving Rare Apples. Thank you both for returning to Maine Calling. And as always, we want to hear from you in the audience. Do you have an apple tree on your property? Do you have a favorite place in Maine to pick apples? Is there something you've always wanted to know? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Such a treat to have you back. And John, I'm going to start with you because, you know, I think pretty much everybody likes apples, but your love of apples is unsurpassed. How did it start? When did you catch the bug?
Well, I think it happened when I first moved to Palermo, and that was in the spring of 1972. And I was 21 years old and knew nothing about apples except that there were green ones and red ones. And all around me in town, all around Waldo County, were these ancient apple trees. And I started to notice them. And in the fall, the apples would fall on the lawns, and no one was picking them. And so I began to stop at people's houses and say, can I have your apples? And they would say, sure, yeah, you can have them. And I would get bags and cardboard boxes and whatever I could find and start collecting them. And, of course, immediately I began to realize that actually there were more than just red ones and green ones. There were yellow ones and purple ones and striped ones. And invariably, grandma or grandpa would come out and join me, and they'd help me pick the apples off the lawn or out of the grass, and they would say to me, oh, that's a Baldwin. That makes a really good pie. Or, oh, that's a Northern Spy. Or, this is a Wolf River. And one by one, I began to learn the names. And as I did, I became more and more interested in the stories behind the apples and the history behind the people who named them, who propagated them, who grew them. And one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I had gone down a very deep rabbit hole that that has gone on now for just about 40 years.
And it's become your life's work.
It has become my life's work, yes.
Renee, what about you?
I developed a love of apples growing up in southern Minnesota. And yes, back then there were two apple varieties available in supermarkets. But in our backyard, we had a collection of apple trees that my father planted. One was a Wealthy, another was a Fireside. We also had a Whitney Crab. And I just loved the vast diversity of what was available from this plant. And then from there I went on to study horticulture and was drawn into pomology by the professor who was at the University of Minnesota. And I just loved what they did in their life's work, studying the science and understanding why apples grow the way they do and why they're just adapted and love to be in a cold climate.
All right. Well, you know, French word for apple, as you well know, is pomme.
Pomme.
And you're a pomologist. What makes a pomme as opposed to a different fruit, another kind of fruit?
The seeds are in this inside a cavity, and the outer flesh is derived from the outer parts of the flower.
Okay. So an apple, pear, what else?
Pomegranate. I can't remember right now.
Quince, is it quince?
Yeah, quince.
But not many fruits. Apples are special.
I think loquat is a pomme.
Okay, okay. John, I know that I read, reading your book and researching for this program, that, you know, people didn't used to only use apples the way we do now. Now, today, maybe, you know, we pick up an apple and have one with our sandwich at lunch or make a pie or maybe applesauce. But there were so many more uses. If one could go back to colonial Maine, how were people using apples?
Well, I'll diverge a little bit from what you're saying, but I'll try to answer the question. And that is that as I got to know these old apples, these old varieties that I was finding all over, you know, mostly Waldo County, but eventually all over Maine, it occurred to me that many of them don't taste very good when you eat them fresh. And many of the orchardists that I would meet years and years ago would say, oh, these are junk. No one should grow them. They're no good. We should only grow the modern apples. And I thought to myself, this doesn't make sense. Why would people have grown these apples for generations and propagated them over and over again and saved them carefully and named them? And that was when I decided I would learn how to make a pie. And a friend of mine taught me how to make a sort of semi-passable crust. And then I started making pies with every old variety that I found. And I began to see, oh, guess what? This is not meant to be eaten fresh. This is really good in a pie. In fact, this is the best pie I've ever tasted. And then I started making sauce with every apple I would find. And some of the apples, actually, we think sometimes that with applesauce, you just take whatever you can find, throw it in a big pot, and can it. But actually, a really good sauce apple cooks in just a couple of minutes, and the skins break down, and they're delicious. And only a small set of apples make really phenomenal applesauce. And then they made cakes, and they made apple butter, and they even made molasses out of apples, where they would take very specific varieties that are low in acid, make cider out of them, press them, and then boil down that very sweet, insipid apple cider into molasses. So they made molasses, and then, of course, they dried them and baked them and made cider out of them. So, and then there's all sorts of interesting recipes like apple snow and bird's net pudding and all these things that people were doing with them because people were eating their dinner, as they called it, in the middle of the day, at home. They were working at home and eating what we call lunch at home, and they were cooking. So most of the apples were either consumed in liquid form or being cooked. And the dessert apple, as we call it, the fresh eating apple, is not a modern invention, but the notion that that's the apple that you always want to get at the grocery store, that is actually a recent thing.
Why do you think we don't use apples like we used to?
Well, I think it's largely because of, it's wrapped up in the transition from the small diversified farm where people mostly lived and worked at home into the commodity style of agriculture that we have today that is, you know, it corresponds to the fact that people generally don't work at home anymore. They go away to work and they want to take something with them that is essentially a snack, and that becomes the apple. It's also wrapped up in just the commodification of agriculture that now we need to be able to go to a grocery store in 20 different towns and they'll have the same variety so we can recognize them, whereas 150 years ago, you would go from one town to another and there'd be different varieties in each town, in fact, on every farm.
Mm. Renee, give us a little history lesson. John said something about why did they plant them and why did they name them. Plants are not native to North America, are they?
I mean, apples are not native.
No, they're native to Asia. But modern names are easier to remember, much shorter than the old names, like Belle de Basse Coupe, an old Dutch variety. Honeycrisp is much easier to say and remember. So, I think one thing John forgot to mention is the resurgence of hard cider. And some of the old varieties that people used to plant are making a comeback, like Kingston Black and Harrison, which are basically inedible apples as a dessert, but taste great when you ferment them, ferment their juice.
All right. John, when did people start planting apples in Maine, apple trees in Maine?
I don't think anybody knows exactly, but my hunch is that they were first brought over to North America by the Basque fishermen who came to hunt whales and to fish for cod off of Newfoundland. And they were here sometime around 1500, maybe even a little earlier. And when they came in ships that were built around immense cider barrels that were 5,000 liters. And they drank cider all the way over to North America and all the way back and spent 6 months of the year harvesting whales and rendering the oil. And when they came, they brought apples with them. And some of the apples that wound up coming down into Maine, say 100 years later, 150 years later, may have been maybe the descendants of those early apples that were brought over by the Basques. But as soon as Europeans came to every part of New York, New England, all up and down the East Coast, they brought apples with them, mostly in the form of seeds. And so they planted apple seeds, which do not come true to type. So these are random chances. And they were planting them everywhere so that they were very quickly, there were millions of apples from seed growing all over the eastern U.S. What Johnny Appleseed was famous for is just simply what was happening all during the early part of our history was apples being planted by everyone from seed.
And these were just, someone would buy an apple seed. They wouldn't buy a specific variety or something. They didn't know.
No, they were bringing with them like a little pouch of seeds in all the other stuff that they brought over with them mm-hmm. when they came over. They planted the seeds, and then from those seeds came our American varieties because they would notice a seedling that was particularly good for something. It made a good pie, or it kept all winter in your root cellar, or began to ripen in August or something, or made good cider. It had some desirable trait. Then they would propagate that particular selection by grafting, and that's how you replicate an apple. Is not by seed, it will not come true, but by grafting. And so these varieties that I write about and you know, Renee mentioned Honeycrisp, one of the most modern of all varieties, all of these varieties, the first one, the first Macintosh that ever was a seed. It came from a seed. Every other Macintosh that ever was came from a graft.
Mm. Renee, how old can an apple tree grow to be and still produce?
Gee, over 100 years. But modern orchards, they replant their orchards every 40 years because trees die and you get too many dead spots in the orchard and it's no longer economical to take care of the orchard.
Sure. And John, you write a little bit about what orchards grow now. A lot of orchards like a dwarf variety because it's easier to pick the apples, right, from a dwarf variety. What was that?
It's much easier.
You don't have to carry big ladders around to get
short ladders.
Yeah, and but there's pros and cons to the dwarf varieties.
In my opinion, it's all pros.
Go ahead, John.
In mine, it's not all pros. Or maybe it's pros, P-R-O-S-E, or instead of P-R-O, whatever
okay,
that
okay.
is.
Okay, Renee, why are dwarf apples so wonderful for orchards? We'll let you have your time. I didn't know this was going to be a controversial
It's a personal
show today.
Opinion, John. I understand it's just a personal opinion of mine. But I've been picking apples for the last 2 weeks, and I find it to be heavy labor. It would be even a greater burden if I had to pick from larger trees. I don't like to climb ladders, especially in wet weather, because I'm always afraid of falling. And with the bigger trees, I feel like I'm fighting the tree to get the apples, whereas with my small dwarf trees, I don't have to reach into a dense canopy.
John, why do you prefer non-dwarf apple trees?
I give up. No, I don't give up. I think everything that Renee said is completely correct, and in general, the commercial orchards are moving or have moved almost entirely to dwarfs or what we call semi-dwarfs. And this is the rootstock upon which the graft is grafted, the variety is grafted. The standard, so-called, the old seedling rootstocks that varieties were grafted onto for many generations, those trees have certain advantages, particularly for the homeowner, but especially for the historian. And these trees are very long-lived, and not only will they live to be 100, there are documented apple trees in Maine that are 200 years old. This could not happen on a dwarf or a semi-dwarf. They have a much shorter lifespan. And so I think that aside from the sort of romance and the mystique of having big trees and the beauty of having a tree as opposed to a shrub, also these trees will outlive us all. And so were the old varieties only grafted onto dwarfs many years ago in past generations, most of those varieties would now be gone because they would have to have been grafted over and over and over again to keep up with the dying trees. Whereas now we can go out and find trees that are 100, 150 years old and track down and preserve varieties that were thought to have been lost many years ago.
Well, we have so many questions coming in. I'm going to go to one before the break. This is a voicemail that came in before the program this morning.
Hi, this is Carolyn from Bar Harbor. I've heard that long ago people had many more varieties of apples than we harvest today. And as I hike, I'm intrigued when I find old abandoned apple trees. What varieties used to be grown in Maine that are no longer common today? Thanks.
John?
There are dozens, if not hundreds, that used to be grown in Maine that are now only rarely grown. So many, many varieties. And each town, each area of Maine had its own mix, its own assortment of varieties that would have been typical or common in that particular area.
All right. Well, we are going to go to a break now. We are talking apples. We have two of the, I don't know, Maine experts, world experts on apples with us here in the studio. Your questions, more of your questions when we get back. This is Maine Calling.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Breakwater, Curiosity for Life, offering exceptional day school and after school options for toddlers through eighth grade. BreakwaterLearning.org.
The biggest worry for the head of U.S. counterintelligence? China. Both traditional espionage and corporate.
Semiconductors, nanotechnology, they want a green energy. What are we doing with agriculture? Biopharma.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. My conversation with America's senior spy catcher this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's this afternoon between 4 and 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio. It's Wednesday, so that means Science Night on Maine Public Television. At 8, nature looks at the world of the octopus. And at 9, NOVA goes inside the megafire, a look at the 2018 Camp Fire, the deadliest in California's history. Nature at 8, NOVA at 9, Science Night on Maine Public Television tonight.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the apples of Maine. My guests are two apple experts. Renee Moran is a tree fruit specialist with the University of Maine, and John Bunker is author of Apples and the Art of Detection, Tracking Down, Identifying, and Preserving Rare Apples. In both cases, I just very much shortened their biographies. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. On the line with us now is Guy Pollan. He is manager with Brackett's Orchards in Lymington. Guy, thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Tell us about your orchard.
It's thought to be one of probably the oldest orchards in Maine. It was established in 1783 in Lymington. But before that, it was said that they grew apples with Deer Notes and Mundroy Hill is today. There were two brothers, Josh and Abraham Brackett, that raised apples about 1650 in Portland.
Wow.
So the apple history with that family goes way back.
I understand it's very challenging to survive as an apple orchard today because of world economic pressures. Talk about those.
Well, it used to be that certain varieties in Maine were really popular, and the new generation seems to favor different varieties. That being said, there are a lot of varieties at the supermarket that come from different parts of the world that are, you know, I would say fresher than ours at different seasons, and the public really has been spoiled. So we used to have controlled atmosphere rooms and store apples for a long time until almost July. So we've eliminated that and just sell them, you know, till Christmas, basically. So that has changed. And there are a lot more varieties at the supermarkets now. So the consumer has more of a selection. So that being said, you know, you're losing a little piece of the pie every year, basically.
Mm. Tell me about your apple season this year. How was this year for apples? I know we've had a dry spell, though it's raining in many places today. Is it still pretty good?
Yeah, we've had like 5-6 weeks of basically no moisture. So some of the varieties have had a hard time. Macintosh, statewide, and New England basically are running a lot smaller than normal. And I don't know if that's because of lack of rain, but other varieties are thriving. And every year, certain varieties do better than others. Like this year, it's a great year for Cortlands. You know, they're beautiful size. It's a great year for Ginger Golds. They've got nice size. They're growing extremely well. And Honeycrisp have grown extremely well this year. But all in all, I've been lucky. You know, I didn't get any hail disasters or big storms or, you know, any serious bad news, you know.
Great. Guy, before I let you go, let me ask you, what's your favorite variety? Or will you not say?
Well, you know, I eat like a couple apples a day. And what I prefer is like an apple that's really ripe on the tree, just because it has so much flavor. Like when the macs are about done, you might find a mac or two on a tree, a Macintosh, and they just taste fantastic. And then, or Portland, you know, at the season's about over, they taste great. But I will say my favorite variety is Honeycrisp. It's a multi-flavored apple, and it's just very good. Super consistency, and it's just a really good apple. And I think the new generation really likes Honeycrisp. So about 10 years ago, we planted a lot of them, and it seems to be a very popular apple.
Well, Guy, thanks so much for calling in. Guy Pollan, manager with Brackett's Orchards in Lymington, traces its founding down to back to 1783 and possibly earlier as well. Thank you, Guy, so much. We're going to go to Corliss, who's calling from Monhegan. Hi, Corliss. Go ahead.
How you doing today?
Great.
Thanks for taking my call. I bought a house in Unity, Maine 8 years ago. And at the end of the driveway is a monster of an apple tree. And I don't know anything about apples except that I like to eat them. And we started by picking, chopping off some of the suckers that were growing. The first year, the apples had black spots on them, and we kind of attributed that with a lack of knowledge to some kind of stress. And so we started trimming off some of the suckers. And in the subsequent years, the apples have gotten a little bigger. And the black marks that were on the early apples are disappearing. Now I want to go another step because this is a very old tree. The house that we bought is 1850. There are three or four trees across the street, and there are two on the property, one yellow apple and this red apple. So I would appreciate any information with regard to how to manage a very old and very large apple tree to maybe get a bigger apple out of it And certainly if the gentleman is interested in taking a closer look at it, I'm not very far from Palermo. The tree is located on the Stevens Road. You can't miss it. It's a big tree. If he's into apples, he'll recognize the tree.
All right. Either of you want to respond, Renee?
My suggestion for getting bigger apples is to simply prune the tree in the wintertime and prune it more severely than you would actually like to do. Most people actually don't prune their trees enough, but I usually take off about a third of the branches when I prune my trees.
Okay, Corliss, thanks for your call. We have a tweet. We found three wild apple trees behind my mother's house last weekend, and we were able to press 3 gallons of cider from the apples we gathered. What are some tips for pruning apple trees to allow the best apples to grow and keep the tree healthy? You said prune well, be aggressive, but how do you know if you've never pruned an apple tree before? Where do you start?
I would recommend starting by doing some background reading on the principles of pruning, like what are the different types of pruning cuts, and being able to recognize, distinguish flower buds from leaf buds, and then take a class where somebody actually takes you out into an orchard and does a demonstration and then guides you through the process.
We'll go to Lucy, who's calling from Mofka. Hi, Lucy. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Hello, John.
Hi.
I wanted to call in to to plug a couple of great apple events that we have coming up at Mofka in October and November. And the first one is on Sunday, October 13th. It's Great Maine Apple Day. That's an annual celebration of apples that we have at in Unity at the Common Ground Education Center. And there'll be lots of apple things going on, cider pressing and workshops. And John will also be part of a panel there to help people identify their apples from home. And then we have an apple preservation workshop on Tuesday, October 22nd. And that's at 5:30 p.m. at Fork Food Lab in Portland. And that will be exactly what it says. We're going to be learning how to preserve apples by canning, drying, and freezing from Kate McCarty of UMaine Cooperative Extension. And we'll also have Sean Turley there, who's going to teach us about Maine heritage apple varieties. And then we have a third one, Perceiving Apples, which is a very exciting event that John is a part of. And that's a collaboration with the Portland Museum of Art on November 7th. That's a Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. And John will be sharing his passion for apples and some of the information from his book, as well as there'll be a reception following with cider tasting, sweet and hard cider, and John will sample some of his apples to us.
Wonderful, Lucy. And we will post information about those events on our Maine Calling Facebook page and web page. Thanks so much for calling in. And speaking of the Maine Organic Farmers and Gardeners Association, John, you're involved in a big project. Tell us about the Maine Heritage Orchard.
Well, as I began to essentially collect old varieties, what I would do is I would, when I determined that I had either was able to identify it or maybe not identify it, but it was something new to me and very old, I would take the cuttings called scions and bring them back to our farm and graft them onto a branch of one of my trees, which the trees became sort of like a library of varieties. So some trees might have 10 or 15, some trees might have 10 or 15 varieties on them. And that was a way of preserving them, of making, you know, when the road got widened or the tree died and got cut down or whatever, I would have them and could then propagate new trees from the branches that I was starting. Well, I ran out of room. And before he died in 2012, Russell Libby and I, he was the executive director of MOFCA back then, the longtime executive director, he and I concocted a scheme to turn a 10-acre gravel pit that MOFCA owned into a terraced heritage orchard. So the orchard, as I say, 10 acres, and it was a big gravel pit that had been abandoned, and we terraced it and began to plant one tree each on standard so that in 200 years, the trees will still be there, we hope, and excuse me, one each of these varieties that were historically grown in Maine. And we're now up to about 300 varieties, and there will be more. Every year we add a few more. And it is a place where varieties can be studied, can be photographed, fruit can be tasted. New trees can be propagated from these trees because now they're growing and producing the twigs, the signs that you need. And it's also a place where orchard education can happen. So we teach classes in grafting and pruning and so forth and so on.
Neat. We have a tweet from Lucy. How can you tell when an apple is perfectly ripe and ready to pick?
Usually by its taste. That's the easiest way. You pick it off the tree and bite into it. And if it tastes like it's supposed to and has a good aroma and still is crispy, it's ready to pick. But in my dealings with apples, I like to pick them before they reach that stage because they'll hold up in cold storage a lot longer. If you pick them when they're tree ripe, they have a limited shelf life and they're meant to be eaten right away.
On the line with us now, Stephen Babula, owner of Orchard Farm Orchard Ridge Farm in Gorham. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. I love being an apple grower.
Oh, tell me about your philosophy. How is it different than many other orchards?
We got into apple farming as I wanted to expand my offering to my customers, having been a vegetable grower. And when I put in my first apples, I had talked with Renee and gotten some very good feedback. I decided not to grow Macintosh and Cortland that everyone was doing. I chose instead the best of the disease-resistant varieties so that I could really offer a low spray. But it turns out that I found some fantastic varieties that seem to perform really well. So not only did I find that I loved growing the apples and turned my farm into an apple farm and no longer grow vegetables, but we have a complete lineup of apples that is not usually found at other orchards, and we can offer, we think, the lowest spray apples around.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't realize how much care goes into an apple tree for an orchard. When you say low spray, tell somebody who doesn't know about apples and apple orchards, what that means exactly. What is a typical spray and what is a low spray?
Well, there are many pests that afflict apples, and weather conditions, disease threats, fungal problems. By choosing varieties that may have sensitivity or resistance, it's going to affect your program, how you're going to raise, produce the fruit. I think of it as healthcare for the apples. We're busy from as soon as the apples are beginning to wake up in the spring, even until now. Just last night, I was out putting nutrients on the trees for next year so that their buds would be nice and healthy. And that just included putting fertilizer out on the leaves of trees that had already borne fruit and had been picked. So it's all summer long, all spring, all fall as well.
All right. Well, when is the best time for visitors to come to Orchard Ridge Farm?
Our farm is young, and we have apples from middle of August through the end of October. But because we started planting late ripening apples, Columbus Day and beyond, we have some fantastic apples coming up the middle of October, but eventually we'll have solid picking for about 3 months.
All right. Well, Stephen, thanks so much for joining us. That's Stephen Babula, owner of Orchard Ridge Farm in Gorham. An email from Angela. I'd like to put in an apple-related plug. The Southern Aroostook Soil and Water Conservation District will hold an Aroostook Apple Day, celebrating fruit and varieties for the North, this Saturday in Holton from 10 to 3 at the Unitarian Church. John has been a supporter in the past, and Fedco Trees continues to help sponsor this event. It's free, open to the public, lots of varieties. I love, John, that this emails from Aroostook County, and the last call was from Cumberland County. Apples really grow in every corner of Maine, don't they?
They do. We have 16 counties in Maine, and apples grow in every one of them. And even today, you can find, especially in the old trees, you can find different varieties doing well in different parts of the states, and even the new varieties, different varieties. And the new varieties, different ones do better in one part of the state or another. And in Arista County, where I've spent quite a bit of time over the years doing what I call fruit exploring, the apple that people up there, especially the old timers, all know is called Duchess. And so I like to stay in Arista County, or in the county, Duchess is the king.
Well, we are going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your questions about apples. There sure are a lot of them. Stay with us.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Waterville Creates, inviting you to Variety, an evening of exceptional entertainment in support of the arts on October 19th. WatervilleCreates.org. Bull Moose, celebrating the tactile experience of reading, and proponents of dog ears and bookmarks. Locations across Maine and at bullmoose.com. And Local 188, celebrating 20 years of Spanish cuisine in Portland's West End neighborhood, and at local188.com.
Today, the U.S. faces prominent questions about American policy when it comes to Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and more.
Look, there are realities of power in the world, and there's a realities of power in the Middle East. We are not going to remake this region into our own image.
Next time on Intelligence Squared U.S., three big questions about our relationship with the Middle East today and in the future.
That's coming up today at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Everyone pretty much agrees that honesty and openness are good qualities, right? But is there ever such a thing as too much transparency?
So I believe that inside of a company, everybody should know what everybody gets paid.
Which is crazy.
You said it, not me.
What happens when you take transparency all the way to its limit? That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
That's coming up this evening at 11 here on Maine Public Radio.
And welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking about Maine apples. My guests are John Bunker. He is the author of the new book, Apples and the Art of Detection, Tracking Down, Identifying, and Preserving Rare Apples. And Renee Moran is a tree fruit specialist with the University of Maine. John, your book is beautiful. Where does one find it?
Well, currently you can get it at Gulf of Maine Books in Brunswick, and you can also get it through FedcoSeeds.com, which is Fedco sells seeds, trees, bulbs, etc. And you can also get it from us directly if you go to our website, which is outonalimapples.com. And before too long, we're working on this. We hope to have it in every bookstore in Maine. But if you own a bookstore, get in touch with us. We're working on that.
Okay. And Renee, let me ask you. People are sending all sorts of questions that we're not going to be able to get to in the time we have left. If someone wants to know how to take care of their apple tree, they can go to your website, right?
That's true. I have a website through the Cooperative Extension at the University of Maine. It's called Growing Fruit Trees in Maine. They're also welcome to call me at my office or email me.
Okay. We'll go to Margie, who's calling from Jonesboro. Hi, Margie.
Hi. How you doing?
Great.
Oh, I love this program. I have 41 acres, and I moved here 34 years ago. There are like 40 or more apple trees here. They're all old. And some lady came by and said to me, we used to go pick the astrakhan apples over there. And she pointed where they were. And she said they have red in them or something. I don't know if anybody knows what they are. But quickly, I have to walk on the apples in order to get some. The deer eat them. The animals eat them. I had people coming from the end of the road, and she had two buckets, and she had a cider. She had a cider thing, and her and her daughter picked them. But everybody has apples. But I'm telling you, I have loads of apples. But what's an astrakhan apple?
Okay. John knows. You know what an astrakhan apple is?
In about 1837 or so, 4 apples were imported by Massachusetts Horticultural Society from London. London got them from Europe, and somebody in Europe sent them over to London via. They all came from Russia originally, someplace in Western Russia. So. One of them was Duchess of Oldenburg that I mentioned that's popular in heuristic. The second one was Alexander, which was named after the Tsar. The third was Tetovsky, and the fourth was Red Astrakhan. And Red Astrakhan probably came from Astrakhan down the Volga River. Nobody knows. It's an old, old variety. And it was grown all up and down the main coast, well up into the county, and is famous for its summer pies.
Mm. If somebody wants to be able to identify an apple tree on their property, what do they do?
Well, first of all, they should buy my book. and then after you buy my book, then you could contact me. And I think you could reach me through outonalimapples.com. And I could begin to help you do it. It's something that I've been working on for 40 years, and it is not easy to do. Some are very easy. It's really easy to tell the Beatles from the Rolling Stones, but once you get into the complicated ones, it's a process.
Margie, it's so nice to hear from you. Thank you for calling. We're going to go to Sean calling from Garland. Hi, Sean. Go ahead.
Hi there. How you doing?
Great.
I had a question for John.
Fire away.
All right. So have you been to Garland to search for apples?
I don't think I have. Well, I've been to Rollins Orchard many times, and I believe uh-huh. they're in Garland. Is Rollins in Garland?
That is.
Yeah. So
yep.
I know Ernest well.
Very good. Yes, he's great. I work for him some. So I live in Garland, and I live on the road where the original Rollins Orchard was. And I had a man come to my house to look at a Jack Russell at one point, and he was very much into apples and ended up taking some of my apples and my Jack Russell. I was wondering if that was you.
No, it wasn't me.
I invite you to the property then.
Yeah, I'd love to have a Jack Russell. I need somebody to get my rats. I just have collies. We've standard collies, and standard collies are like the best farm dog ever. And I've been trying to convince my wife to get a Jack Russell. So if the person who took yours doesn't want it anymore, they can contact me.
Sean, thanks for your call. We have an email from Eric. This week, I discovered on my property an apple tree that seems almost to be a cross between an apple and a pear. The apple looks like a small golden delicious, but tastes more like a pear. Is this possible? Renee's nodding.
Oh, yes. There's quite a diversity in flavors that exist within apples. And I've heard people talk about apples that taste like oranges, strawberries, bananas. So, yeah.
We have a tweet from Gerard. This will make you laugh, John. Honey crisp apples are the IPA of apples, perfect for the American palate that likes to put ketchup on everything. I love apples and I like ketchup, but they don't really go together. Let's see. We'll go to somebody from Portland. Is your name really Cortland?
It is. It's a kind of a dramatic irony for my question, actually. But yeah, my name is Cortland, C-O-R-T.
And are you on a speakerphone by chance? Because I'm having a hard time hearing you.
Oh, no. I'm
oh,
on
that's
a,
better.
Not on speakerphone.
Oh, that's better. Go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. Well, I'm actually calling. I have kind of a strange situation. I recently ate my first apple ever. It's kind of a long story, but I'll get right to the core of it. I grew up thinking I was allergic because I'd had a bad reaction as a child. So my dad, who was a doctor at the time, made sure there were none in our house. But it turns out I'm not, and now I'm very excited. There's more varieties than I could have dreamed of, and my question is, what sort of apples or even unique apple varieties might you recommend to someone who's trying them for the first time?
You could start at the supermarket, and this is a great time of year because all the varieties are available. And I'd just say start with a collection from sweet to sour. Granny Smith would be on the sour side, and Fuji would be on the sweet side. and then maybe some local apples from a farm stand like Honeycrisp and Macintosh.
One of the great things about the Maine commercial orchards is that pretty much all of them, aside from having the kind of more popular ones like Honeycrisp or Macintosh or Cortland, they almost all have a few other interesting varieties. So I would recommend to everyone, go to your local commercial orchard and just check out what they have. And if you don't see it in the farm stand, say to them, what do you have that's, you know, particularly unusual? And often they have a few trees of this and a few trees of that, of something that will be probably something you've never had before.
Good luck, Cortland, with your apple exploration. We're going to go to a voicemail that came in before the show.
Hello, my name is Kate, and I'm in Cumberland. I'd love some tips from the experts on how to best store apples. Even with keeper varieties, I've never had much luck storing them over winter. Last year, I stored them in the fridge, and they got soft and mealy. Our basement is cool but not cold enough, and on the other hand, our detached garage gets too cold. Thanks.
I would suggest that you start by picking them at the best time for storage, which is before they're fully ripe. And if they're if they have a little bit of greenness anywhere on the skin, you could judge that by when the greenness changes from dark to light green. Once it becomes yellow, the apple is ripe. Other people go by seed color. When the seed color changes from white to brown, the apple is ready to pick. And you want to get it before it's fully ripe. It'll last a lot longer.
All right. And of the three places she named, the refrigerator, the basement, or the garage that gets too cold, what would you recommend?
I recommend the refrigerator. And professionals store their apples at a temperature of about 34 degrees. Maybe 36 to 38 for Honeycrisp. So the refrigerator temperature is probably a little too warm for optimum apple storage.
Interesting.
Traditionally, Mainers stored their apples in what we call a root cellar. And the root cellar can be a perfect way to store your apples. That's where we store ours. The trick is getting it cold enough, fast enough in the fall. But we pick our storage apples right around Halloween. We wait till the last second when we think the temperatures are going to be too cold. We pick them and then put them in the root cellar. The root cellar, we try to keep at about 34 degrees, which is what Renee was recommending, and also very high humidity. And in a root cellar, not only can you keep your carrots, beets, potatoes, and so forth, you can also keep your apples, and they will keep all winter long.
We'll go to Beattie calling from Camden. Hi, Beattie. Go ahead.
I just sent an email because I didn't think I'd get in. We used to pick drops, lots of them, bushels, and we'd take them to commercial squeeze. And I've talked to John about this. And now, of course, we're not allowed to because of the E. coli that developed in cow stomachs for eating corn instead of just grass. Anyway, it's a long story. And now you can't take them to the commercial squeezes. And some years we get a lot of apples, and I find private squeezes, but, you know, it's just seems like it ought to be easier to squeeze your apples and squeeze drops because they're there and should be used. And I would always bottle them, so it wasn't frozen raw apple cider like you buy. It was bottle juice, and my husband would make hard cider, which was wonderful, like champagne. It was just great. So, and I think of all the bottled juice that comes from the Northwest. I just feel there's an opportunity out of there, but it's true. It's got to be heated or hard cider.
Okay, Beattie, thanks for your call. So looking for places to squeeze the apples. Any in Maine?
Oh, yeah. There are still cider presses throughout the state, and if you poke around, you should be able to find something. And particularly for those of you who are fermenting your juice, the fermentation process would kill any E. coli that might be on your apples. So I guess the message there is ferment it.
All right, Beattie, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Brian in Dresden. Hi, Brian. Go ahead.
Hi. Colin, could just ask about resources for getting some rare apple trees. I recently got a chance to taste an apple CSA in central Maine and tasted some apples that I'd never heard of that were really good. I bought some property that I'd like to kind of plant a little bit of a home orchard on. So I was wondering if you guys could give me some resources locally in Central Maine.
Sure. Both John and Renee, I'm sure, can tell you where to find some unusual apple trees. John, why don't you go first?
Well, I did start Fedco Trees about 35 years ago, and we do sell many different varieties of apple trees. We sell a different assortment every year. We sell the Max and Cortlands and Honeycrisp and so forth, but we also sell historic varieties, unusual varieties, and many varieties that are practically untested. They're brand new, odd things that have come out of here or there, but a lot of them are the historic varieties, Northern Spy, Baldwin, and Black Oxford, and so forth.
And Renee, I know that you do a breeding program at Highmore Farm. Is that do you sell some of what you've created, or is that for research?
It's a fairly new breeding program. I started a few years ago because of the shift in the commercial production industry towards club varieties, which are privately owned or totally controlled within one state. And this limits what the new varieties that Maine apple growers can produce. So to counteract that, I think I needed to start my own creation of new varieties that suit our local climate. And one of the things I'd like to do in my breeding is to actually bring some flavor back into these apples that are stored a long time.
Okay, so when will they be available?
I think it's something for the next generation, which gives you an idea of how long it takes to get a new variety in commercial production. But within this state, I'll probably have a few varieties for tasting at my farm in about 3 years.
Okay, we can't wait. And John, quickly, what would you like to add?
I think it's great that Renee is doing this, and I encourage all the listeners to start apples from seed, too. It is really fun to do. You're not going to necessarily create the next Honeycrisp, but who cares? Because every seedling will be new and unique, and it is just really fun to start your own, and then a few years later, many years later, they fruit, and you get to see what you get.
Well, we're out of time, and if you want to learn more, if that was confusing to you because you've never grown an apple tree, I suggest you pick up Apples and the Art of Detection by John Bunker. Thank you, John, for being here on the program today. Also to you, Renee, a tree fruit specialist with the University of Maine. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Maine Calling, produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.